Welcome to the F1 Geeks podcast, where we take you deep into the world of Formula One. Join us every week with a new episode where we update you on F1 news, what's happening with contracts, the drivers, teams, circuits, and last but not least, all the behind-the-scenes drama. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you stream. Give the episodes a like and follow us on your favorite social media channel. Cheers. This is technically episode 50 of the podcast, David and Samantha and Titus.
Hey.
Technically, we've actually got probably like 57 or 60 under our belt, but we haven't numbered a few of them.
So. Does that include the double count? Remember?
I corrected that. That doesn't include the double count. So today's episode, we're going to review the Italian Grand Prix in Monza. We're going to talk about how Danny got his dick back. And all the news that came out this week. But first of all, congratulations to all the McLaren fans out there and Ricciardo fans, because he finally got it. He got the win. He's going to win. He won his bet with Zach Brown. Well, I guess it wasn't really a bet. It was more like an incentive, but he gets to drive I'm not excited about this at all, but an old Earnhardt senior car from 1984 Chevy. Was it Impala? No, it was Monte Carlo. Yeah. So,
hey, it's still a race car, regardless if you like NASCAR or not. It's still a race car, and it won. So, you know, that's what he wanted. That's cool.
It's cool. It's out of all the cars Zach has. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, you would drive a, you know, Audi V8.
I'd drive that MP4. Right? I'd drive that MP4.
But let's be honest. Like, there's people who love the Audi V8s, right? And would love to drive them. People normally not from Australia. And he's the other way around. He wants to drive an American car, you know.
Good for him.
Good for him.
I'm happy he gets his dream.
Wouldn't be my choice since Zach has a 962
and too many other
Porsches. Wouldn't be my choice. But hey, each his own, right? So
you guys, how did you enjoy the race?
Mamma mia. To quote Super Mario, I guess. I don't know. It was all the flair that one would expect from a race in Italy. And I think one of the thoughts that came to mind was like, I dub the Monza podium as only for those who persevere. You know, like Arthur was the only one who could take the sword out of the stone. Those who persevere win the Monza podium, in my opinion.
It kicked off exciting because don't forget the sprint race, right? We had super excitement there with Bottas starting on top.
Yes.
Oh my Lord. And then Gasly. Oh wait, no. I'm not going to get to Gasly yet, but.
Can we save the sad stuff for later?
I know. But go ahead. What do you guys, let's talk about the sprint races, because there was a certain Sergio Perez after this that kind of made a little statement about sprint races, saying more or less he basically said they're stupid. He doesn't like them. I wonder why.
Yeah, well, look at where you're starting from. To the point of Monza being great, it was great, especially that we didn't really get a good Spa. It was nice to have a good Monza. The sprint race was exciting for the first three laps, and then it kind of
processional
way. Yeah. And unfortunately, and I was expecting closer racing. I was expecting anything, but it was kind of a procession. And to be honest, it looked like practice laps. But the start was good, you know. After Mercedes did everything in their power to put Bottas and Lewis in the best position, Lewis didn't deliver. And let's be honest, he didn't deliver on that start, and that cost him. And that started to swing the weekend towards Max's favor. As we'll talk about later, it started to swing back. But I thought that was very interesting how Mercedes, this weekend, you cannot doubt Mercedes' strategy, because they did everything possible to get Lewis a win. So, but yeah.
What do you guys think of like just a 11 lap sprint race? Not 30, not 20, just like 10, 11 laps, like bam, all out. Everybody's always going to be on softs, just blitz.
I'm still not entirely sold on the sprint racing. I mean, it's what's the word? Like, it's still new and it's still shining, but I'm not entirely sold on it. I think David sort of nailed it with saying like it just ended up being a procession.
So here's why I bring this up. For 2022, F1 is now considering standalone sprint races. And what that means is they'd host the qualifying on Friday like they did with this weekend's sprint format. And then on Saturday, the sprint race results would yield its own points. But Sunday, the grid would be set by Friday's qualifying again. So what are your thoughts on that? This is something they're considering now.
I think that makes more sense than the format that it is right now.
But if it's processionary, if we find that it's just like what we just saw, would it matter to just do that on Saturday as a short race and then again Sunday the full race? Like, is it really like curing anything or giving us anything more? Or
sorry to butt in, but here's a quick question: where's the third sprint race going to be?
Isn't it Coda?
No, they haven't. Okay. They haven't really validated yet. They were trying to do it in Brazil, but I don't
know.
Hard
to overtake.
Yeah.
So that's my thing. Like, if you do it at Coda, if you do it at Spa, I think a sprint race can be fine. You would think that Monza with the DRS, here's an idea, which they probably won't go for. But let's say they did something to change the DRS zones for the sprint race. That might add something to it. But
DRS whole, on demand whenever you want it.
Maybe not on demand, but maybe change the zones or something. Like, I don't know. I'd have to look deep at the tracks, but something to make sure that it's not a procession, you know. But it doesn't. It should have fit Monza. It didn't. I think it should. It will fit Coda, you know. I think maybe Imola would have fit. A sprint race at Imola would have fit.
Interesting.
You know. But
if the issue is a track that's hard to pass on, that's a track that's hard to pass on as well. So
it is, but people make mistakes at Imola, right? People make mistakes, and that what gives you the opportunity to overtake at Monza, coming out of the last corner or going into turn
that didn't happen
six
much.
Or seven.
They actually kept it together. So I don't know if drivers were being conservative or what. I didn't read or hear much about it, but. Well, I mean, one way or another, I think they're here to stay, honestly. I know they haven't said that, but the fact that they're already trying to consider other formats for it means they really are pushing for it. So I think one way or another in the future, we're going to have them. Just a matter of how the format's going to look. So overall, I mean, it's only two data sets for us. We've only seen two races with it, but one, I think, was a success, obviously, Silverstone, and this was kind of stale.
But seeing Lewis after in his post sprint interviews, he looked so dejected. He basically was like, well, I just handed it to Max. So, and you're just like, oh, this is interesting. This is not a Lewis we are used to seeing.
I think something will need to happen to the sprint race format to spice it up. Mm-hmm. Something else needs to be injected. What that is, I don't know yet. I need to sit down and give it some thought. And send a letter to Stefano. So,
wait, what about a mandatory pit stop? Two tires, like they do in F2. So you have to run the medium and the soft, but you get the choice of what to start. Right.
I think that would only work if they figure out a way or they remove a set of tires from the weekend. Basically, their whole goal with everything is cost savings, right? So, and we're going to get
in theory.
So,
but
if they did that, drivers would have to go into Sunday with used sets of tires, which I guess could also add some more excitement for the race day weekend as well.
Can't they allow an extra set just for the sprint on sprint weekend? Say, hey, we're going to allow kind of like a wet race. Say we're going to give you an extra set, you know, just one extra set.
Anything in our world, man. We can do anything we want.
What if they just splash the track? What if they put a truck with water?
That was Bernie Ecclestone's.
That's right, Bernie.
Bernie wanted to do that. He wanted to set up sprinklers at some of the tracks and run intermittent rain, basically.
Let's do it. Let's try it out. Also, I'm just annoyed that on a Friday, I'm in office now and I have to sneak and watch and like, you know, watch my back because I'm watching qualies at work. I'm not trying to get fired for watching it. Anyways, just my problems. So that's fine.
Anything else to add about the sprint race? Anything? We saw Bottas take it, although he got a penalty for the PU. He ended up starting last on Sunday. Had an amazing day on Sunday.
Oh my God.
And anything else you guys want to talk about before we move on to the race?
It's set it up for Sunday.
Here we go. Bottas was supposed to start on pole, as I just mentioned, but didn't. Started last place. I want to get into this by immediately talking about Perez versus Bottas.
Let's do it.
Because this man started dead last, finished third, finished on the podium. And Perez, in what is like what people are all saying now is the fastest car and the best car, starts eighth and finishes fifth. He only moves up three positions. So what's going on? The battle of the number twos. What's going on with Sergio? Is he not as good as we thought, or is Bottas better than we thought, or both? I mean, we're not talking about one race here. We're talking about the whole year. This is kind of, although Titus. Bottas had a rough start to the year, he's been more consistent.
I want to hear Titus.
Yeah, he's reignited. I mean, I think we can all agree. Well, maybe not. Let me not speak for the group. But I look at it like Bottas is in the best position ever, right? For himself, right? He's at the best team. He knows it's his last few months. He has a multi-year deal with a team that's going to basically build around him. He's going to get the preferred treatment despite whatever money any of the new driver is going to bring. Bottas has the experience and sort of the name to really exert himself there. So I think Bottas is just playing with house money, and or should I say driving with house money. And that's what showed up. That thing that was missing that I alluded to last week, which is when he was at Williams before he came to Mercedes, like what Bottas was known for was his ability to charge up the field. And this past weekend, we just saw like why Valtteri was hired, signed by Mercedes when they lost Nico. Valtteri is a guy that can qualify well, unlike Sergio. And he's a guy that when he is feeling himself, he can really fight. He can really charge up the grid. And that's what I was like, yo, where has this been? Like, we haven't seen this in a few years. And it was good to see that. And he said, like, you know, this is the best that he's seen himself, like, you know, fight up the grid ever in his career. So even he notices that. And so I just think he's just rejuvenated because he has nothing to lose, whether he performs well or not. Like, everything is signed and sealed for him. He's done as good of a job as you can as a driver for Mercedes when Lewis Hamilton is your teammate, one of the all-time greats. He's won championships in terms of constructors' titles. He's the consummate professional, and he's the best teammate, I would say, on the grid, because not only is he somebody that you can get along with, like, outside of the cockpit, he's someone that is going to follow team orders. And as much as people might, you know, look down upon that, like, Valtteri really, you know, he's been everything Mercedes needed him to be. And so I think now he's starting to be everything he wants to be, which is a guy that people look at and say, oh, he's one of the top drivers, you know, top 10, maybe top five. And I think that this past weekend was just him reasserting himself and being rejuvenated by the Alfa Romeo deal.
That's a beautiful love letter to Bottas.
Look, I get a lot of flack for, you know, calling him out. It's almost like, you know, the way I feel about Ben Simmons in basketball. It's like we can criticize and we can give it up at the same time. Like I criticize Valtteri because, you know, the ability is there. Like, you've seen it before. We saw it at Williams. We saw it the first 2 years of Mercedes. We're just like, what's going on with you? Why aren't you performing the way that you need to perform? And we can make all the excuses in the world, like, oh man, you know, they're leaning towards Lewis and this and that. But if you want to be great, if you consider yourself an alpha or number one driver, you gotta fight through those pressure cooker situations and find your way on top. I know we talked about Sainz last week, how he's kind of forcing things versus Charles, but that's because Sainz, he wants to be that number one. He wants to make sure that Ferrari just doesn't look at him as just a partner driver for Leclerc. And I think Valtteri just got beaten down over the years and it affected him. But I mean, I do understand that mental aspect. I'm not like neglecting that, but I'm very happy that he still has that fight in him, because it's he could easily just become a shell of himself, which we saw at times. Right. And then with Sergio was never a fast qualifier. So I never looked at Sergio as qualifying well. And then what's troubling me with Sergio is that it's not really Sergio, it's just Red Bull. And this is something I said before. Albon, Gasly, Perez, they're all struggling with that second seat. Something is going on. What's happening? Because Max can't do it alone. It showed itself again this past weekend. Like, they need that second driver to make sure that, you know, when Max is in a tough position, they have somebody that can, you know, help Max out, you know, bring the race back to Max. And they didn't have that with Perez this past weekend. And unfortunately, Max, like, put himself out, but we'll get to that point. But yeah, I mean, Sergio, I'm not really looking at Sergio. I'm looking at Red Bull. Like, there's something up there.
I think what you can definitely jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think generally what you're speaking to, and I think we've said this in the past with the podcast, you know, we can collect all the data we need on the tires, on the engines, on the mechanics of the car. But at the end of the day, it's the drivers themselves that are like sort of unknown variables or unknown entities, and that data can vary from day to day. And I think when you're talking about that sort of that desire or that perseverance, those are sort of, they're not consistent. So now you're saying, you know, Bottas is renewed. He has a contract. He's in the best place, and that's where he's performing. He performs when he's feeling safe. And I think that there's all these random variables at play. And I think back to, I hosted a chat on Women of GP on Clubhouse. We had Sasha Smith, who's a performance coach, and she said one of the biggest things that is missing from a driver's dossier of support is psychological help. So I think that that's the unknown variable when these drivers perform either incredibly great or incredibly poor, like on either set of spectrums. It's a bit of a mental game that they need to make more consistent. So I hope that the environment at Alpha is conducive to Bottas performing in a way that he is at a high level, and that we could see more of these sort of performances from him as well.
Yeah. I'm going to slightly disagree with Titus. We say everything he wanted to be. I think everything he wanted to be is a champion, right? Let's be honest. He wanted to be a champion. It didn't happen. He got face-to-face with one of the greatest drivers, as you said. And we did say, I won't keep touching on the same points, but I think you could even go back to Bahrain when George came in. Everyone had the expectation that Bottas would smash George, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody, but a lot of people were hoping that George would show his worth, right? And that's a weekend where, you know, as a driver, you know you should perform, not because you really have to, right? But you know the press is going to get on you. And he didn't show up that weekend. It was like, he's like, either didn't care or who knows. He didn't show up that weekend, and questions start coming out. Then it starts beating on your confidence and all that. And that is a reflection on the driver himself, right? Like, no offense, but anytime a young buck wants to come test, right? People who like to be on top, we enjoy some young person trying to test us, whether it's in our career, whether it's anywhere, because you want to show your dominance. And that was a point where Bottas could have showed his dominance, but he kind of was like disinterested, you know, like, oh, I don't need to prove it. I'm, you know, everyone knows who I am. So I do agree that this has rejuvenated himself, but I will say that I always thought he was a better driver than Perez. If you look at the history of what he's won, if you look at the history of what he's achieved, he has more accolades than Perez. Nothing against Perez. I think he's a great driver. And I do agree that Red Bull is not, they're not giving him the proper tools. They're giving him tools, right? But they're not giving him the proper tools for Sergio to be successful. They're just giving him good tools and like, go do it.
Build it yourself.
Yeah. Right. Go build it yourself. There's no way that he should ever start a race lower than eighth. It just, unless he takes a penalty, he just shouldn't. In fact, he shouldn't start lower than six.
Really, right? Fourth is where he should be.
He should be fourth.
Maybe
Norris has a wonderful qualifying or something. Who knows? Or maybe they don't get it right, but he shouldn't start lower than six. He really shouldn't. And you look at the number of times he started lower than six this year, it's a freaking travesty, man. It's a travesty. Yeah. So I do point the finger more at Red Bull.
More at Red Bull than Perez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. More Red Bull. I
would agree. So the race starts. We're going to jump into the...
Let's do it. Let's just go ahead.
Oh, man. Gasly and that front wing and it going off.
He was just not having a good weekend. Yeah.
Yeah. So the weekend started off rough there.
But AlphaTauri in general, actually.
Yeah. And Yuki, what? He was out on like lap one or two, or he was out before. Yeah. AlphaTauri, both cars were out. That's right. Which, by the way, Yuki made some comments about his contract renewal. Did you guys catch it by chance? I have it here. I can. Oh, man, maybe. This kid killed me. Okay, this is what he made about his contract renewal. Yeah, I was a bit surprised. I'll be staying for next year because I just keep crashing and spend lots of money for the team. So, how do you feel if you're AlphaTauri or Red Bull, and then you hear this guy say that?
I would give him more money. Sorry.
I like
the genuineness. I like the honesty. Like, I mean, yo. Okay, granted, yeah, look, I'm a fan of Yuki and I'll still be a fan of Yuki. I think with Yuki, like once he gets that part of himself where I saw this past weekend, he's making that change. Like, it's slowly but surely, but he's making that change from what we saw earlier in the season. I think he was very much like putting a lot of pressure on himself. And
tonight he's making a joke. Sorry, I'm going to let you finish. Just.
Oh, okay. I didn't know there was any joke there. But no, I think like earlier in the season, he was putting a lot of pressure on himself and it was coming out, boiling over in a very toxic way. And I'm seeing a much more focus on like getting better at, you know, not allowing that to like seep over. So like in his press conferences, even when he's frustrated, you can tell that he's trying to say the right things and just be honest in the moment and not like put blame on other people, but like put the blame on himself. And like, I felt like that.
Like calling Kubica an idiot.
He definitely had some outbursts. On the radio this week.
No, I'm not talking about the radio. I'm saying press conferences. Like I'm saying press conferences. I say like in the battle, in the heat of the battle, like, I mean, these guys call each other idiots. Like we've seen it in various situations, whether they're culprits or not. Like it would be qualifying and they want to talk about like all the cars that are like, you know, lining up in some sort of train formation, or Max talking about like, he didn't give me space. So like I just, when we talk about radio, I think that's a very like, no, I don't even think about that. What I'm talking about with
when Esteban Ocon's driving straight and Vettel says he drove into me.
Exactly. So yeah, like with Yuki, with him saying that comment, getting back to it real quick. I just think he's just trying to keep it real. I mean, but look, we know like there's been some sort of like deal with Honda and Red Bull in terms of IP in order to get Yuki to where he is. And I think Yuki understands that there is that pressure, you know, in terms of like Honda is basically going to bat for him and he wants to do right by them, right? But he hasn't yet learned how to sort of take all of that in as a young driver and be able to produce, not just produce, but produce on a consistent level. So I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of growth happens over this offseason for him, and maybe the stability of somebody like Pierre Gasly will serve him well. But I mean, I had no problem with that comment at all.
I'll make it quick, David, so you can jump in and Ash. I actually completely think he was making a mockery of the situation. Like, I thought it was quite offensive. And if he has, and this is completely my understanding of it, like, this is how I perceive it. You know, if I have the backing of Honda and I understand that I have this position, I would treat it with a little bit more delicacy, like, or I'd be a little bit more delicate, sorry, with the situation and be a little bit more humble as opposed to making it a joke. Cause I think it's rude.
Anyways. Professionalism and maturity is definitely not there. Like,
no,
you have juggernauts of industry on the planet, not like in your hometown, not in a county, not in a city. You have juggernauts backing you and giving you a contract. And then by now, at this stage in your career, I don't care how young you are, it's at this stage in your career, like, he should know better. He's got massive amounts of coaching and people around him. And he's now been here for, you know, they start learning already in F2 and F3, and they're definitely already, they're taught and handheld to some degree in F1 now. It's been, what, over half a year he's been here now. So, and he's made other mistakes in the press already, so I'm sure he's been lectured. So, yeah, it's a little bit bizarre. If I were a Honda or a Red Bull exec hearing that, seeing that, I would be like, I'd be like, that right there. It's like when somebody pushes too hard in a negotiation, like, all right, you're asking me to shop around. you literally just asked me to shop around. So I'm like already moving on and getting ready for the next step. And I don't care. I'm not even going to be looking at him the rest of this season. I'm already looking at what my contingency is going to be now. Mm-hmm. So that's my position.
To me, it was one of those comments that is confusing, because you're like, is this guy taking it serious? Is he making a joke? You don't really know where it stands. And I think one of the biggest surprises, like, culturally, you don't expect that to come out of the mouth of a Japanese person, right? But just be real. You don't expect, because you know, you're like, is that, because culturally they would never do that. But you're like, maybe this guy's a little different. But I've got someone close to me who's originally from Hong Kong, and he told me, you better believe on the off season that this is going to be corrected. And he said it's going to come from Japan. And this is a guy who I'm pretty sure, well, he's worked in Asia. He's from Hong Kong. He's worked in Asian motorsports. He's probably spot on. Right. He told me Japan is going to correct this, or this is going to be his last year coming, like the coming up years will be his last. And culturally, I don't fully understand that, because I'm not Japanese and I have only had so much interaction with the Japanese, but I do know a little bit of the culture, and I can see this not reflecting well on them. He has to perform. If he wants this kind of freedom to say whatever he wants, then he better start grabbing podiums.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Ash.
If you've ever heard Kamui Kobayashi and like Takuma Sato talk and present themselves and how they speak about their careers and anytime you've ever seen them in the press and or when things are going wrong, they are so, like, they're programmed. Dare I say that's a part of, like, Japanese culture. And I would say that's probably a part of, like, German culture too, right? And some of the others, like, it is definitely a habit, not a habit, like a characteristic trait, right, of the culture. So yeah, if a group like Honda, who is fairly traditional business, Japanese minded, hears this, I think 100%, like, this is not going to be tolerated. I wouldn't even be surprised if he was pulled sooner.
You're free to be your own man, right? If you're performing well, give me a clean weekend. Give me one clean weekend. No crashes, a good start. Give me something that we could
blowouts.
Say no blowouts, no outbursts. Give me something that say it's going in the right direction, because I'm sorry, Ty. I just don't see the progression yet. I see a lot of raw talent. I see a little bit of hype. And even watching him in F2, I said, man, this guy is lightning quick. I did not think he was going to be in F1 so soon. I thought they were going to give him another year. But I said, oh, he's got talent. Like, obviously, he's got raw talent, right?
I'd say it's untamed talent.
Exactly.
Just, you know, not, exactly. Like, not even raw. And my comment to Tsunoda is like, if you want to tell jokes, quit your day job. Like, go ahead.
You know, yeah, like we talked about this earlier in the year. Like,
I think we're being hard on the kid. Like, I mean, look, like, he.
It's a different culture, though. Like,
no, I do understand. Look, as somebody that, like,
you're in a position of privilege. Anyone can take your spot at this point. You want to tell jokes? We'll place you.
Well, I think, all right, so at the same point in time, all right, we've seen people break down due to the pressure, right? We've seen people become a shell of themselves. So we don't know if this is somehow his defense mechanism at this point in time in terms of trying to alter his natural way of doing things, which is having those kind of like extreme outbursts. And he's trying to somehow figure out an alternative way so that he doesn't present himself as volatile. I don't know what it is. So my whole thing is this, to David's point, which I hear you, like, if he performs, like, people are going to treat him like, you know, how Kimi was and is, and how Lewis was and is. It's like, Fernando, like, if you perform, all the theatrics and the drama of how he conducts himself really at the end of the day won't matter, because it's about winning, it's about performance, and his performance is not there. But at the same point in time, I'm looking at it like what Helmut Marko says, and I hate to quote him, but he was right when he first assessed Yuki, which is, he said Tsunoda is fast, he just has to learn how to be a driver. And there's a difference between being quick and being an F1 driver. Like, there, and that's something that Max has to learn and has been learning in terms of, yeah, you can have the fastest quali, you can dive in the latest, but you have to be able to pick your spots, learn how to manage your tires, learn how to strategize within the car without your team. And he's learning all of this stuff. He's soaking all of this stuff in. And look, I'm a lot more lenient when it comes to with Tsunoda. Yeah, granted, like, I'm a fan, but I think you all are being quite ridiculous in terms of saying, like, yo, he should be gone. He could be gone by like, you know, the end of this year. He might not.
We didn't say he should be gone. We said he will be gone if so.
I don't think he'll be gone. I think. Yuki is in a good spot, and it's just going to take a little bit of time.
So we'll get back to the race, but I want to make one more comment about Yuki, and I disagree with you and Helmut Marko. Yuki's not shown quickness in F1. He's shown quickness
in F2.
In F2.
No, so, but he didn't say F1. I'm saying he said he's quick, but he needs to be a driver. Yeah.
Well, then fair. I'm saying, though, he's not showing quickness in F1, and he's got all this other crap to go with it, and therefore it's quite interesting. I'm still surprised that they signed him again for a full race year and not pulled him off as being a reserve or something and tried to develop him somewhere else, then bring him back as a potential spot, especially with this whole everything that's happened with Albon. Maybe because they were able to land a seat for Albon at Williams, they're keeping him around as well. Initially, I thought it was a Honda thing. I still think definitely Honda has something to do with it, that relationship to keep a Japanese driver in the sport. But I can't imagine Honda will continue to go back for him if this continues. What's blowing my mind, even with Max, and we'll get to some comments about Max's maturity in a bit, but Max makes mistakes, but you don't tend to see him making the same mistakes twice. And so, yes, he's still growing. He's 23 years old, but when it comes to him speaking out, like, it kind of is what it is. There are some moments where, yeah, he makes some asinine, says some asinine things, but you said it. Performance trumps that. Look at Lewis, man. 7 championships in. He still freaking cries on the radio and something is not perfect for him. Like, he still whines to some degree, I should say. And maybe I shouldn't say cry, but so that won't be tolerated though. That's not going to be tolerated. So there's no way he sticks around if the performance doesn't show up. And he can't just be mediocre and continue to be like this. He has to like shine and outdrive his teammate at the very least. Right now he's not even.
I don't even think he has to do that. I think.
Okay, so wait, I'm gonna jump in here. So next year, right? Let's say, well, Gasly will be his teammate. What does
Gasly's gonna be his teammate?
What does the head-to-head need to be that you're like okay with Yuki against Gasly?
It depends. Like,
let's say 20
next,
races.
Next year is a variable that is unknown, right? So I can't even like fathom.
Give me
that.
A number, Titus. 20 races. How many races does he have to finish in front of his teammate that you say you're satisfied? Considering there's new regulations,
give me 5.
Why does the new regulations matter? They're all driving under the same clean slate.
I understand
because he's saying that Gasly will have more experience and probably be easier to adapt to the new regulations, which I don't disagree with. I don't necessarily disagree with that. So I'm saying we'll just say, you know, maybe Gasly will adapt better.
And Gasly is obviously the clear leader of AlphaTauri. Like that's whether or not, you know, we want to see him in a different team. Like he's their front man and they build around him. So, I mean, all I'm saying is that, and like, let's not knock Gasly as not being one of the young top drivers. Like, I mean, this guy has shown himself to be not just a superb driver from, you know, like one weekend and then maybe another weekend, but consistently, like that P6 position in qualifying, you could rename it Gasly this year, you know, because that's how consistent he's been.
He's out driving the car, but I still don't think 5 for Tsunoda to have 5 versus 15.
He's going against Gasly.
It's not good enough to stay in F1, man. This is the Shark Tank. Like it's you got to pull like 8 or 9, right?
You gotta get close to 50%. Yeah,
5 is not good enough, man. Like for us sitting on the couch, maybe we're like, yeah, that's fine, but not for teams investing millions of dollars. It's just not good enough. They're gonna can him if he does, you know, if he goes 5 and 15.
What's the first thing, David, Titus, and Samantha, all three of you? If I'm the Lawrence Stroll, if I'm the proprietor of a team, and I tell you, what's the first thing we can do to make the cars fat, to make us have better finishing positions and more points next season? Well, you reduce the slowest driver.
Right, get a better driver.
The first thing you do is always can the second driver, the guy that's slowest. So, and I guess why I'm bringing that up is because that's why, ultimately, he can't be around for too much longer.
Well, if that was the case, Albon would have had a seat. And we've seen.
Well, that's why I brought up the point.
Red Bull get rid of Kvyat. We've seen them get rid of Alex. So, like,
but now you're dipping into politics because I think it's politically why he's staying there politically.
There's also a reason why Albon, and that's why I said earlier, because Albon was able to get that Williams seat, I think that's more of a reason why also Sonata stuck around. Mm-hmm. They've kept him around because they were able to place Albon elsewhere. The other thing is Alpine and Ferrari's Young Driver Academy is looking a lot stronger than Red Bull's at the moment. And so the talent pool for Red Bull in the near future is probably not as high. And I think that's playing to Sonata's hand as well right now. So, which again, could be another reason next season he might stick around potentially.
Well, they have is it Liam Lawson? The young New Zealander who's really good in the Red Bull
Academy. Is he an F3 or he's an F2 now?
He's an F2. He's good. He's really good.
Tell me who shouldn't be there anymore. Tell me the driver who shouldn't be on the grid anymore.
Oh, God. I mean, out of 20 driver championship, Nikita Mazepin is 21st right now.
This is the only time you see me smile after Mazepin mentioned. LOL.
So if that, I'm assuming that's what you wanted me to bring up.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Off the list now. Thank you, Kubica. okay, let's not beat up Yuki enough or too much tonight. There's a lot.
I'm going to defend him to the end of the earth. So you already know what time it is. Hey.
That's fair.
I don't think anyone's picking on him. We all want him to. I think everybody here wants him to do well,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
We had said that it was great to get a Japanese driver one who was touted so highly. Like, we want to see, you know, that this diversity in F1, you know, we want to see a Japanese driver do well. But I hate to say, like, this is not the guy we were promised, but it kind of feels like this is not the guy we thought we were going to get. Like, that's, you know, it's so.
Give it time, David. Have faith.
Hey,
come on.
You tell me when F1 gives anyone time.
Yeah.
The whole sport is centered around not giving anyone time. You don't give the engineers time. You don't give the mechanics time. You don't give the drivers time. This whole sport is centered around not having time. So you can't give anybody time. It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, I'm going to be as hard on him as everybody else is. So,
yeah. So we're going to jump back into the race now.
Yes.
Mercedes saw something in this race that the rest didn't by starting their drivers on harder compounds. And it obviously played out amazing for Bottas with that strategy. And Lando killed it for Lewis, because we're going to talk about the performance on the McLarens, but especially Lando, because Lando held off Lewis for so much time and for so long that it kind of was shooting the strategy of him getting around and getting a run on Max. So we talked about the McLarens potentially doing really well at this track. Everybody was kind of touting that on the last podcast, and they did. They showed up. They did amazing. Did you guys expect Danny to do this well, to race ahead of his teammate?
No.
And listen, like, is Danny back? That's the big question. Yo, he says he never left. Show me some more podiums. Give me some more podiums. Show me more top fours, like top fives. And then we'll say you're back for sure. This is an awesome win. Don't get me wrong. This is great.
He posted that on his social, and I was so tempted to post back, you kind of left. I didn't.
He doesn't even need podiums. He just needs to finish ahead of Norris, right?
Yeah.
So,
No, go on, David. Yeah.
No.
Give us more. Give us more, Danny. Yeah. And then we'll say you're back. Yeah, sure. Go on.
I think we mentioned that, right? And David mentioned that, like, a little bit of consistency in his return, meaning like a few races of performance, and then we'll say he is. So let's talk about the big incident, because I know this is going to take up a lot of time, depending on opinions, if we all have different opinions. I can't remember what lap it was. I didn't even actually write this down, but after the second set of pit stops, first round of pit stops, it was after, after Lewis's pit, because Lewis pitted
out. It was around lap 29, something around there. Around
Lewis coming out of the pits, Max coming down the front straight. They go into the first corner, don't make it through the second corner. Max's car ends up riding on top of Lewis. Halo strikes once again in a positive way, of course. I don't know how the roll bar. I don't know how that roll bar on that Merc crashed through like that. Something needs to be addressed there. We can talk about that on another show if we don't want to address it now, but something needs to be revised there. That thing should not have collapsed so easily, but the Halo did an amazing job. I've never seen a driver's head get pushed so far forward in an open wheel car like that. Because you know how tight they're strapped into those seats, and how far back, like David, I don't know, Samantha and Titus, if you guys have ever been in an open wheel race car, or any race car for that matter.
We know firsthand.
With harnesses. But like when you're strapped in, the harnesses, the way they come across, you cannot move. Like when I say you cannot move, this is the movement you have, the up and down with the head.
And then your
arms going like this. And even your arms can't pull all the way up. That's why they all look like they have short arms going like this when they're waving out the cars. Yeah. I don't know how it pulled his head so far forward and it didn't freaking break, dude, his neck or something. That was crazy. Yeah. And I saw him mention after the race, saying he's like, the first like 20-30 minutes after, I didn't feel anything, but my neck got really sore about, like, you know, a couple hours later after the adrenaline wore off and stuff. So
just a little scooch of whiplash.
Man, thank God he's okay. First and foremost. Yeah. But
yeah.
Let's talk about it. Who wants to start? What do you guys think? Was somebody at fault? Was it a racing incident? That's the big question. And was somebody at more fault than the other? And we got to talk about the penalty that was given that was given afterwards as well. David, you're going to start this one. Go for it, brother.
I'm not starting.
All right, I will start.
I'll start it.
It was a racing incident. Go.
it it wasn't a racing incident. I mean, this was Max just being a poor sport. Like he felt like his race was over. He didn't want to see Lewis, you know, basically take the lead in the championship. Yeah, you could say that Lewis should have left you space, but once you see that you're being squeezed out, you got to take the action that Lewis took when he was forced out by Max early on. I just felt like this is going to continue to show itself, like with Red Bull, because there's no one there reprimanding Max, and it's a very dangerous game they're playing. And you know, Daniel Ricciardo kind of alluded to it during like the Drive to Survive. I think it was the first season, maybe the second season or whichever season, like he left for Renault. Like you have a situation there where whenever Max makes these sort of like dicey decisions, and he never comes out and says, look, I could have done better there. And like we could say like other drivers don't do that, but like with Max, it's like there's a whole freaking conglomerate that just allows him to continue to be this driver that he's been in regards to like these kinds of situations. And it has to change. Like I this was so dangerous. Like we're talking about a possible spinal injury, God forbid that didn't happen. And yeah, like it's kind of a freak thing the way it sort of bounced off the curb. And maybe we could talk about like the curves being there and everything, but I felt like Max just was doing too much there. And I know Julian Palmer and all these other people were breaking it down and felt like it could be a racing incident and stuff like that. But I think that's just being nice. I think Max is at fault here and the penalty is much deserved. And he just needs to understand like not every battle needs to be fought, period.
Go ahead, David.
I want to hear Samantha first.
No, go ahead. No, please, go ahead.
If you want to consider it a racing incident, you could say 90% at the fault of Max, 10% at the fault of Mercedes. I'm giving Lewis zero fault. And 10% at Mercedes because they knew there might have been a small risk of him coming out near Max if things weren't perfect, right? These teams... they always try to find a gap for the pit stop. And I was surprised that they pitted after they went on the hard strategy. So I was expecting Lewis to do another 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 laps. And because of the mistake of Max, I guess they felt track position. So they're going to bring him in immediately. He should have come out in front of Lando. It didn't happen. But the fact that they wanted to play that kind of dangerous game, that they could even come out close to each other, I didn't understand that for Mercedes. So I'm going to lay 10% there at the fault of Mercedes. The 90%, anyone who has raced at Monza, and they have raced at Monza before, going into turn one and two, does anyone ever overtake on the inside at turn two? Almost never. And if you do go side by side, there's usually contact, most of the time wheel to wheel. Someone gets pissed off in the gravel. It is not a place to overtake. So my thing was like, why would you even attempt that? And if you're going to attempt it, why would you late break and try to attempt it? Because you know it's not going to work. And I think I can't judge, but maybe in his mind, it was a win-win situation. I crash him out. It's all right. I'm ahead. I get in front of him. It's all right. I get in front of him without anything of consequence, right? And then on top of that, I get out the car and I'm like, that's what you get, you know, when you don't leave space. And I'm like, yo, hey, Kettle, spot on the phone. Got something to tell you. I mean, come on, man. This is the one guy who does not concede corners. This is the one guy who does not know how to back out. And he's going to be like, oh, should have left me space. I mean, yeah, I can't repeat what I said while watching it live because people are going to think I don't know Jesus. So I'll just say that I was absolutely, it's just stupidity. It's really stupid. From a racing standpoint, it's stupidity. He probably could have gotten Lewis coming out of that corner, if he just tucked in behind him and got earlier on the throttle, he probably could have got him down at the next corner or in a couple of laps. So I didn't get it. I just didn't get it, man. It was just throwing away a race, and also lack of sight to see that you're racing in a year where you're limited by budget. Now, maybe his damage wasn't that bad, but you're racking up the cost here, man. It's just stupid. It's absolutely stupid. It brings nothing. Yeah, I was frustrated that that's how it ended. I don't mind racing incidents, but to me, that was unnecessary, especially with him late breaking into that corner. And nobody does that. Everybody knows that that is the number one trouble zone at Monza. And I'll leave it at that. So penalty deserved. Yeah, probably 5 or even 10. I would have been like, hey, whatever. I'm fine with that. But it was just stupid. It was just stupid. So, yeah.
It's very interesting seeing these lions fighting for the pride. Like, and I always think of like, this is lacking of composure. You would have thought that someone would have learned their lesson post Silverstone. And we're seeing mistakes being repeated. We're seeing ego get in front of strategy, in front of, you know, like you said, David, there was no foresight to any of this. The one thing I will say though, Max walking away without seeing Lewis, I don't take too much more offense than, like, a lot of people seem to be really upset about that. I'm of the mind, if you have nothing nice to say, if you're feeling hot-headed, walk it off, go away, ask, you know, follow up. And then I also think of the fact that, like, this might be stupid correlation to make, but like, George Russell hit Bottas on the head after a racing accident. So I think, like, if Max had resorted to that, like, I think he would have resorted to that, unfortunately, which is like a terrible say on his character, but like, I was happy he walked away. I think that showed.
But the car was on top of each other, you know, like, it's okay to walk away, right?
I get it.
But even going back to karting days, when your cart lands on somebody, you normally go over and be like, hey buddy, you okay? Like, even though I hate your freaking guts, I just want to make sure I didn't take off your arm in that incident, right?
I get that.
I'm kind of a Samantha on this. I don't think it's that big of a deal. And for two reasons. Number one, he looked clearly over at him when he was walking away and kept walking. And so he probably saw him moving. Number two, when he was getting out of the car, Lewis's car was chucking rocks at him because Lewis was trying to move out. So I'm sure he heard the engine blazing and the attempts of Lewis trying to back out. So for me, that wasn't a big deal as much as some people are also, I think,
up in arms about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't think so. David, you like to bring up the red mist all the time with drivers in these situations. And so I think Max did enough. I think had Max looked over when he did and not seen the guy moving or something, I'm sure Max would have done something. I would like to think that Max would have done something, but he was looking over at him as he was walking away. If you look back at the replays and you could see Lewis like trying to move around and doing like whatever he's trying to do to get the car out and whatever. So I'm going to chalk one up to he's just pissed. Yeah. In his mind, he was like, Lewis fucked me over. Excuse my
language. Yeah, of course. Like, of course.
And so therefore I'm going to keep walking. I don't have anything to say to this guy.
Walking off.
For me, it was a racing incident. If there was only a 10 second penalty deemed on Lewis at Silverstone, then this was a racing incident. And I think one thing I'm going to say about this moving forward, I do not trust anything the stewards have to say about anything from now on, because the lack of consistency and the bullcrap of one instance to another instance with these things that are going on like this is absolutely asinine. It's a freaking clown show. Like, I don't trust them at all. I think it's all bullcrap. They say that it doesn't have to do with the outcome of events as well. Of what happens, it has to do with the incident itself. There's so much inconsistency in how they're dishing out penalties and everything. I don't trust the stewards anymore. Stewards are ruining the sport, as Jeremy Clarkson said several weeks back. And I'm going to agree with Jeremy and preach that until I see otherwise from now on. I'm not going to blame Michael Massey for it all.
So I asked myself, is it from the optics of it that they're like, we need to give much more of a severe, even though the way that they ended up in the pit, in the gravel, is sort of the same way that it was at Silverstone, you know, very loosely. But is it the fact that his car landed on, it was the danger of it that he got that sort of like severity of penalty, the optics of what it looked like?
I think it was the late braking. Late braking into turn one. Okay. You know, that doesn't freaking work. That's what pisses me off. I'm not, look.
But I agree with Ash. There's a lack of consistency.
everything else I could deal with. And I don't agree with Ash that it's a racing incident, because again, you race differently at different tracks when you know, it's like trying to go side by side at Spa and you bump somebody. You know how dangerous that is. So what do? You try not to go side by side going up a Rouge into Radeon, right? Right, Ash?
You don't so have are you the saying bollocks.
That? Huh?
You don't have the bollocks.
Yeah.
Right. Are you saying that there should be different degrees of penalties per assigned per track?
No, I'm saying that comes into the steward's decision making of, right? They know as a driver, you know, there are certain corners and certain things you don't do a dangerous maneuver. And
here's
we said that for Silverstone as well.
I don't think this was a dangerous maneuver.
But that wasn't a dangerous maneuver at Silverstone.
Yes.
You know, it was high risk, which led to this outcome. It wasn't dangerous, right?
I get. So do you see how he's distinguishing? I don't know. I just want to make sure everybody's understanding. Yes. Okay. So I agree with how he's distinguishing everything. I still say, though, I don't think the situation was, I don't think the scenario and the distinguished action on Max was as bad as the outcome made it look, because this is one of the slowest freaking corners in F1. And to your point of, should you even be trying to pass there? That would be my rebuttal to that. Like, he came around on he wasn't fully ahead of him. When you see the aerial replay, Max's front wheel was lined up just like Lewis's front wheel was lined up to Max at Silverstone in the exact same, almost like car position. And so for me,
Silverstone, that's my whole thing. It's not Silverstone.
No, this is a much slower corner, which goes back to my argument.
So it's a much slower corner. So why don't you break a little bit more and tuck behind the guy? Right. You don't have. Come on, man. No, I'm not buying it. Silverstone was like a split second decision. Right here. It's a slower corner. You know, you can see where the other guy is. You know where your track position is. You know that outside corner or the inside corner right there is very dangerous. Normally you will run over the sausage curbs and hurt your floor. So why not tuck in? That's the smart thing to do. That was.
Yeah, but if that's the case, couldn't Lewis have left him room going into the corner as well?
No. No, he didn't have to leave him room because it was already his corner. He could have closed the door a little bit to either force him over or to have him break.
But that's not how the rules are written. The rules are written that you always leave space when somebody's alongside.
I don't think he was alongside. And there's also racing etiquette, right? There's racing etiquette. And I don't think Lewis did anything wrong racing etiquette standpoint. I don't see why Max just couldn't tuck back in. It just, again, I'm not going to beat a dead horse here. I just find it incredibly stupid. So
this is going to be one of those. Go ahead.
I just think he's a sore, like he was being a sore loser at that point. Like, his race wasn't going well. That pit stop was god awful. And his mindset, he's seeing Lewis coming out of the pits and he's like, yo, like it's a win for me. Like if I make this stick, then cool. If I don't make it stick and we crash, then cool, because I'm still leading the championship. And when you're at that level, I feel like he did himself a disservice, because now when people thought you were making this corner from, you know, few years back, being called crash, Stappen or whatever they called him. Right. And sort of hothead on the grid, you're showing that again. And like, I really thought he was turning the corner. I saw a more focused Max. I saw a Max that was really subdued, you know, when he was having his home race and he won. He was focused. He didn't celebrate like, okay, this is the end of the championship. This is was a guy that was determined on, all right, I gotta be in control and be focused in each moment. Like, what we saw this past weekend was like his emotions getting the best of him. Like, there was no need for him to stick the nose of the car in that position. And like, okay, we can all say hypothetically, you know, this and that and whatever, but at the end of the day, like, what happened is what happened. And that's what we saw. And we can only analyze that. And what we saw was something that was very dangerous that could have been easily avoided had Max just treated it like a professional driver. I don't know if someone like Fernando Alonso does that move, or Kimi, but like any of the other great drivers that we see on the grid. Like, I don't see that happening. And when Max does this stuff, like when he was double breaking, when him as Daniel were teammates, I think it was in Baku. I could be wrong. like did the double move. Like that stuff, like he does these things that really, it's just like somebody has to reprimand him at Red Bull. Somebody has to say to him, you're a great freaking driver, but you're like all glory or like like all fail, like sort of driving isn't going to have you racing long.
No one like will do that because Marco loves his attitude. No one's going to do that. It's just not going to happen at Red Bull. And, you know, back to Ash's point real quick. You know, you talk about Lewis should have left space. You and I both know that corner well, man. And you've driven a lot in sim and you've been there. You leave space for someone to go through. You're going to end up in the gravel, man. So I would like you to show me how you're going to do that.
Well, you can, because we have seen passes through there and I can find some, and I could actually specifically find some of Alonso making passes on going too wide through there for you, Titus, because you mentioned his name. Also, look at every first lap of every Monza Grand Prix.
Right. But that's not late breaking, right? They're already there.
Sure.
They're,
sure.
Lewis came over to the left and then he went back right. Right. At the start of a race, the person will stay to the right side of the track because they're going to try to hug the right side and leave enough space.
Yes and no. But I've also, like I said, we've seen people in the past make passes through there going around the outside or the inside, vice versa, like late breaking. Yes. Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Please forward it.
Regardless, we have different opinions. And that's, I think, what's happening now, obviously, across the board. And this is going to be one of those with that picture of the car sitting on top of Lewis's car, of the Red Bull on top of the Merc. It's 100% going to be like a historical shot of F1 for the future. Like Prost and Senna in Suzuka. Oh my gosh. Like Schumacher and Damon Hill at Adelaide. Like this is going to be one of those historic moments of a championship, like for the future. Like this was definitely like one of those times that we saw like F1 history. That's not going to change. And so this is great because we don't always have like this much of a difference in opinion on the show, which is good that we do, because this is really what's happening right now. Like everybody's kind of split. You're hearing so many people argue so many different sides.
And it's not new. Yeah, you're right, Ash. It's like not unique to the conversation, and it's a very hard call. And to both a testament to all the people on this grid, this four grid here, I was pretty moderate. I didn't know what position to take. And you've both brought really great points. So I want to just show, like, let you guys know that. Good job, guys. You guys make a really good debate team.
Thank you.
So on with that, they're out of the race. And that left way for our beautiful orange / papaya cars.
Let's go.
To make their way and make their run. What were your thoughts on Lando's comment about,
is this the right
call? Tell Daniel to speed up. And all the other things he said to his team in code or not. What were you guys thinking when you heard all that?
That old Mark Webber? I mean, he's young, but I like what he said after the race, where he understands that he's there at McLaren for the long run, long haul, and he's going to have his moment to shine. And so if Daniel gets this one win this year, like, it's worth it. And I mean, I want to see also that fire in Lando to say, like, hey, speed it up. You know, like, I'm faster than him, that sort of thing. Like, he needs to exert himself in that way, because otherwise it's like, why even try to think of him as a number one driver if you're McLaren? So you want to see that young driver that Lando is sort of say that. But at the same time, when he recognized like how the race was, he perfectly sat into that settled into that number two position, because Daniel was just lights out.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
But this is why they brought Daniel here, right? Because he knows how to win races. He's a proven winner, and he has the talent of a world championship driver, maybe not in the field that he was up against most of his career with the likes of Max, Sebastian Vettel, even though he did pretty well against Vettel, but Lewis, you know, he's been against some all-time greats. Right. And I would put Max as a guy that's good enough to be an all-time great. So shout outs to Daniel for just all weekend staying positive and really saying, like he said it, he called it. He's like, he felt like he was going to have a really good weekend. And I think he was expecting podium, but I don't think he was expecting a win, and he brought it home. And this was great for,
you mean McLaren. He brought it Rome. Sorry.
All right. I said
I'll see myself out. Bad jokes,
and so Samantha has done it. So we got it done. No, I'm so ecstatic for Zach Brown, for Lando, for Daniel. Is he back though? That's the question. Is Daniel back because of this victory? Or as Samantha says, you got to show me more.
He said he never left. Oh, he left. But who wore it better? Who wore the wet t-shirt better? Zach Brown or Helmer Marko?
Zach Brown.
Zach Brown is thick. So that's, I got to pick two. Zach.
That's my
Zach
pick.
Brown. Yeah.
Thick Brown. Yeah.
Just there with his sons. Just like, you know, just having a time with the. Yeah, I think Lando showed himself to be a great teammate and a great opponent. And I think that you want someone to push your teammate. And him saying, you know, even pushing back on the team and questioning them, saying, is this the right strategy? Is this the right play that we want to do? And then he took the win just so well. It was just like, I'm so happy for him. And I think him even saying, this is the long, like, I'm here for the long term, was a bit of a jab.
Nope.
Put down sort of his foot and was like, you know what? Fine, Danny, you can get this. But like, I've been working at this team and I will continue working, and I'm going to hold you accountable and hold you to task. And I loved seeing that from Lando. He's able to straddle both sides very, very well. And I hope we never see that day that he sours and he becomes sort of not supportive of his teammate, or, you know, in any way, like an anti-hero. But he was so solid. I think he would, you know, if they could share it, I would also put Lando as driver of the day.
Well said. I think, as you know, Lando's getting on the radio, things are running through his mind. He's like, look, I put in 2 years here. I've done everything McLaren wanted. I kind of deserve the win. Like, I've been performing. I've been outperforming my teammate. I've been outperforming this car. Everything I've done, I probably deserve the win. And I think that's part of where it came from. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the one weekend where he probably had a chance, besides Imola, to win a race, it's just the weekend that Daniel Ricciardo was really on it. You know, he was a little unfortunate in that way. Like, Ricciardo was on it from the sprint quali, you know, and he's unlucky that he just happened to be behind his teammates. So he's just making sure. And you see the difference between what McLaren has done and built to what Ferrari did with Leclerc and Vettel. Ash and I talked about this previously. I said, Ferrari should explain to Charles, there's no reason for you to argue with Vettel. You're our guy. He's going to be gone soon. So make peace. And that year would have went so much differently. But McLaren obviously has said that. You could tell by the advertising. You could tell by things being said in the press. They're like, Lando, you're our guy. Daniel's here to help and support. You guys work together, but you're our guy. So and look at the difference. McLaren walks away with a 1-2. So great for McLaren. It just goes to show, I'd said previously, Seidel there, great. Zach has changed my mind about himself and what I was doubting him, but good Lord, don't doubt Zach Brown. Just look at his history. Don't doubt him. And just the image of McLaren is coming back. People are flocking back to McLaren now. Right. No one wanted to see McLaren 13th and 14th. We just, like, no one wanted to see that. Right. But again, it's setting up the future, because you're going to have, as we talked about, you're going to have several teams vying for a championship. And I think we're set for like almost a golden age again of F1. So very happy for McLaren.
Y'all said it already, so I got nothing to add. But beautiful. Super happy for them. First 1-2 since 2010, and their last victory was 2012. So,
so McLaren never left.
Yeah. great times, and I'm sure we're going to see more of them. Who was your driver of the day then? Daniel, Lando, Valtteri, anybody else?
I was going to say, I'm going to split it. Like, it's a McLaren driver of the day win for me. Like, both. They were great. They were phenomenal. Cohesive.
Absolutely. You think Lando held off Lewis for as long as he did. And Daniel didn't lose his nerve. So, yeah, it's also a 1-2 in the driver of the day split 50-50.
Ah, nice. Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to give it to Daniel.
Okay.
Like you said, Lando will have his time to shine. So I'm going to give it to Daniel.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Valtteri.
Who knows when he'll get it again.
I have to say, Valtteri, considering all things and everything, did an incredible job as well. I know some people don't like to give credits to those that are in the fastest cars to do stuff like that. But then my commentary to them is, well, why aren't the other guys in the fast cars doing the same thing? E.g. Sergio Perez example. So,
But this is the Valtteri we wanted all the time, right? And again, that's part of the problem. Like, this is the Valtteri we wanted locked in, overtaking, whether he's the wingman or whether he's leading or whether he's watching. It's like, this is what we wanted. And we get flashes of it. We get weeks of it or races of it. And then it kind of just fades away. And you're like, hey, man, what happened? So,
yep.
Yeah.
But isn't that like what separates the greats from, you know, like the really good drivers? I mean, I think we kind of been spoiled by seeing great drivers, right? And then assuming everybody's on this great level, right? We saw Sebastian dominate for consecutive years and, you know, just really just being head and shoulders above everybody. Then we saw Lewis and Mercedes dominance, right? And I think it's just, Nico like alluded to it, like when he said it was so difficult that year that he beat Lewis. You know, it wasn't like he couldn't rest. Like, every single race was grueling. And I think that's just what separates the greats. And we could look at it in all sports, you know, Serena Williams, Michael Jordan, you know, Wayne Gretzky. Like, the greats are, they have a certain level of, I don't know, like, just their ordinary is extraordinary to even the really talented. And so that's what Valtteri is dealing with. That's even what Daniel Ricciardo has dealt with, you know, in his career. It's like, yeah, he's really good, but there are like a, you know, couple, maybe three or four drivers that are just like on that great level that he's just not there with. And I think we should just appreciate Valtteri for what he is. But I mean, feel free to criticize, because I do that all the time, especially with Valtteri.
I need to write that down, Titus. Like, my ordinary is extraordinary to even the talented. That is a great line, man. You need to make a t-shirt with that. That is dopeness. My ordinary is extraordinary to even
that, the talented. I like that last one, though, from you. I like that as dopeness.
That is.
All right. Some cool news happening. Do you guys want to add anything else from the Italian Grand Prix? Any other talking lines? All right. Aston Martin this week broke ground on construction for their new facility of the future. It's the first new Formula One factory and tech center that will be developed since 20 years ago, guys. They're going to be doing things that no one has done yet. They're saying everything's going to be state of the art. And the goal for Lawrence is that he said he wants to make the best, most comfortable and advanced facility to attract the best talent. So
Elon Musk will be like, hold my drink.
Yeah, until he decides to get a Tesla into F1. Yeah. So that's super exciting. That's amazing news. That's good for the sport. That's good for everybody, because that'll force everybody to level up too, which is going to be great for us. So awesome. We need more Lawrences in the sport, more people with that passion and that love for it. We have news, some news, developing on the power unit saga for the near future. They have decided they're not going to have new power units in 2025, that they're going to push, they're going to delay the new power unit formula to 2026. So this is what we've heard so far. They had a meeting on Sunday. This past Sunday, all current power unit developers, Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, Renault, including Honda, Audi, and Porsche. So Honda actually was in attendance at this as well. It wasn't just the Red Bull group. met to discuss the introduction of the new format, which we're going to go in effect in 2025, which we just mentioned. Here's the notable comments. Mercedes and Renault want to utilize all the technology and research they developed in this regulation era, while Porsche, Audi, and Red Bull are saying they want a fresh canvas where everyone starts on a new level playing field. Ferrari says we're game for either scenario. So that's one thing. Second thing, all parties agree to removing the MGUH due to its high cost. They want new power units to continue to be hybrid. And with the removal of the MGUH, they would want to compensate for that loss of power with an increase in electric power and no control standard on the fuel consumption. So the fuel flow item that Ferrari got dealt with a couple seasons ago, won't happen anymore.
So they want to completely remove the MGUH and just only use the MGUK. So we're basically going back to KERS.
KERS.
We're going backwards.
That's what it seems like.
Okay.
Here's the dirty bit that you're not going to like. Actually, I'm going to save that one till the end, David.
All right.
For all this as well, Red Bull is petitioning to be considered a new developer. And so as a new developer, they would be awarded a temporary increase in budget for development of the power unit. And Ferrari and Mercedes are against this.
Naturally.
Of course. So I don't hear Alpine making noise about that. And Renault, and my thoughts on that are they probably want to see how far Red Bull will get with that. And because Alpine is technically, yeah, exactly. Alpine's technically the new group, so they'll probably be like, well, can we get some more money too?
Yeah, exactly. Well played, Alpine.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking is going on there. Okay, here's the dirty bit. Now there's discussions potentially about standardizing the engine block. So the whole goal of standardizing the engine block across the board would be for cost savings. I'm totally against that. Personally, and I know David probably would be too. That's why
absolutely I
said
absolutely.
It's dirty.
Absolutely.
To be honest with you, I'm upset that they're pushing it back even further. We're just moving progress. We're just not allowing us to progress in tech and advance, and that's totally the opposite of what I want with the sport and why I fell in love with the sport.
Maybe because of the chip shortage and how that has had a long-reaching effect on everything. Maybe that's their thinking. So with the 1 year delay, I'm okay, but the engine block standardization, like, come on, man. So many men and women get degrees to do development, to do stuff in F1. And now you're like, hey, by the way, build in this box, go have fun.
JK,
or not. Yeah. Yeah. Or not even like build in this box and use these colors. Is this Formula One or what? Open up the development, please. Please.
It keeps getting constricted.
Yeah.
It keeps getting constricted. I'm like, with all the new rules for aero and following, and that's fine. That's great. Whatever. They're talking about potentially bringing in the future torque vectoring and four-wheel drive and, you know, all that amazing advancements that we're seeing in some of the like hypercars and street cars now, which is great. It's all tech. Active suspension, active aero. That's all amazing tech. It's all amazing aero. It's all engineering minds going to be working, seeing all the ingenuity and come out and stuff. But the standardization of stuff is what gets me, especially the standardization of like the heart and soul of a freaking race car, the motor, like the engine block. That blows my mind. I hope that doesn't go through. I really hope that doesn't go through.
Yeah, it would be great if they could do, you know, they allow two different configurations of engines. And then that has to be made it to a MGUK.
They,
you know,
they tried that in like the 70s and early 80s, and
bring it back.
It didn't seem to do the best though. Like
technology has changed. Bring it back because then you could say, all right, I'm gonna have our electrical power unit put out this many megajoules or kilojoules or whatever, and then I'm gonna make it to a V8 or I'm gonna make it to a V12, and then that. But the problem is F1 has went out and said that we want to be sustainable. We want this, we want that. And when you start saying these things and you allow people to build V12 engines, companies start saying, hey, wait a minute, that's not the most sustainable, eco-friendly thing. And that's the problem, because F1 on one hand, they say they want this and then they can't, it puts them in a box. But yeah, I'm, uh, I don't know. You know how I feel about that. Like I like development. I like it. It's a challenge. It's hard. Torque vectoring is, yes, it's difficult, but man, there's a limit to it. It's calculations. Every team's going to be able to get torque vectoring where they want it, but engine development, it's something different. It's creative.
Absolutely. You know where I stand, man. I don't know if you guys have heard me say this, Titus and Samantha, but I'm all for the Colin Chapman box test for Formula One, which effectively is Colin Chapman said, who cares what we do, how many wheels, how many tires, how many cylinders, whatever. Get a standardized universal size box. Does the car fit? Yes. Then we can go racing. You can standardize the safety equipment and the cage and the crash structures and all that. But whatever we do around that, just let us do it. And then, which would be amazing if they did that with the current budget set, and that's it. And just walk away from it and let these brains do their amazing things. Let the ingenuity come through. But we shall see.
The level of fantasy is definitely escaping the sport.
Yeah, for sure. I'm actually wearing a Colin Chapman shirt right now, so interesting that I brought that up.
Do you see another, like, would this talent, you know, you always see people talk about like exodus of talent, you know, if something becomes too constricting, do you see this talent or this ingenuity going to another area of motorsport?
Yeah. They go to WEC, they'll do stuff, but guess what? Too many people love F1, right? That's why they take crappy salaries and they work for years and years, F1 going up the ranks, because there's something about Formula One, whether you want to believe it's the pinnacle of motorsports or not. There's something about the legacy. There's something about the glamour of F1. People want to be in F1. If F1 offered all of us jobs right now, and I'd probably have to clear it with my wife, of course, but let's be honest, everyone here would probably say, hey, if they're going to hire me in F1, I'm going to do it at least for a year or 2 years, see what it's like, because you kind of want to be part of the circus. And that's the thing. So even if you lose talent, you get talented people, men and women flocking into the sport because they love it so much, you know, and F1 knows they got everyone, you know, they know what product they got. they know it. And that's the biggest issue. So.
No. I was genuinely interested.
Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, like, thank you, David. I was interested in your perspective. But no, you're saying Ash FIA?
Yeah, so the FIA sets the rules, Formula One manages the show. That's kind of how it goes. And the FIA's effective, I don't want to call it the white paper, but the slogan for F1 is that it's supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport and technology. Mm-hmm. And yeah. For advancements and progression and da 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 da. But is it still there? That's the question. That's the argument that a lot of people are making now. It doesn't seem like it is, and it doesn't seem like they're moving as fast forward as they should probably, or we'd like them to.
I mean, they can move faster, right? But if you look at other sanctions, IndyCar compared to F1, WEC compared to F1, NASCAR compared to F1, it's still the pinnacle. Right. Even if you look Formula at E. all that, thank you. That's how much I love it. Formula E, F1 is still the pinnacle. If you look at how the hybrid system works, how the MGU, how the H and K work together with the engine, and even you compare it to how the hybrid system works to WEC, Formula One is on the forefront. But the problem is, they could be 10 years ahead of everybody or 15 years ahead of everybody, but the FIA kind of holds them back, you know? Now that's a whole nother discussion.
That's a whole nother episode.
That is a whole nother episode.
Yep. With that said, that was our show for the day. We got Sochi coming up in 2 weeks. We'll have another episode for that previewing the race. And in the meantime, everybody tonight, or later this week, go out and get on Netflix, watch Michael Schumacher's new documentary that's just been out. I saw it last night. I stayed up all night waiting for it to come out here on the West Coast at midnight. And it was great. It was like another Senna. It was fantastic. You're going to love it. You're all going to love it.
Wait. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm not going to criticize a documentary. I'm not going to say it. It was great. It was great. There was just things that I wish
to be. One particular part.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was, well, I can understand why they didn't. There's just too much to include that you can't. Otherwise, it'd be like a 4-hour show. But there was a few things that they didn't include, which I wish they would have. That's just my opinion.
So, and there was something that they did include that I wish they didn't.
I agree with that, too, because we talked
about that. Oh, you've seen it, Titus? You've seen it already?
Yeah. Okay. But I'm not gonna comment just because like I know other people haven't seen it, but
right.
I mean, to Ash's point, yeah, it's a great documentary, and I think one of the reasons why is because of the access, right? You get the family perspective. You get, you know, a lot of people that are kind of like synonymous with Schumacher. It's really riveting, heart-wrenching. If you're going to watch it and you're a Formula One fan or you're a Schumacher fan, just be prepared. Like, get yourself a lot of tissue. make sure you're not doing anything that's going to require a lot of energy afterwards. it's going to take a lot out of you. But it's good. Like, it's really well done.
Yes. So go get Netflix for it, or jack one of your friends' accounts, or borrow, I should say. My bad.
You know, Mahiri's on my account, so
is he really? Oh man,
yeah. Him idea. And his brother. It's great. Why am I telling that to the world? Yeah. Okay.
So wherever we are in the world, catch us on the next episode, and we'll review Sochi all together. Ciao, everybody.
Very ciao. Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the podcast. If you want more F1 Geeks content to consume, check out the website, f1geeks.com. We have exclusive and original stories. You can also stream every episode of the podcast on there, or you can go to your favorite streaming platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Also, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, @F1GeeksOfficial, or Clubhouse @F1Geeks. Ciao.